You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Jose Youngs here, MMAfighting.com, here with another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Sitting opposite me is, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Carroll. Pete, what's up? How you been? We didn't have you on last week because we were on scene in Las Vegas, so Karamek, Jordan, Casey Lydon filled in for you. I don't know if you watched it, but how do you think he did?
It's just hard for me to watch it with other guys, to be honest. I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, yeah. It feels weird not having you opposite of me. I'm not going to lie. But
I don't have a mustache. I mean,
you're not wearing a punk rock. You're not wearing a. I think he was wearing a Black Flag shirt, so he just had the total package. And
I know it's hard. I tried to soak up his hardcore knowledge when I'm around him. You can actually ask him this. Like, I'll be like, "What type of music? What happened there?" And like, I know these. Like, I know like the first sentence of every story about music. So I'm like, "What happened there?" And he's like, "Jesus, just leave me alone, Peter." I watched one documentary and I kept on just going, and what was that song? And what was that song? And he's like, Jesus Christ, just watch the documentary again.
Jesus, Petesy. Well, I had a great time with Esther, Casey, and Steven. You can watch all of our content over on our YouTube channel. Casey and I introduced Steven to Death Grips, the band that I'm a big fan of, that I don't know if Steven enjoyed them or not, but I did.
It sounds like Sexual Apparatus to me.
Death Grips? Yeah. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But anyway, Pete, I have a little surprise for you.
What is it?
Guess what came in the mail?
What did?
Our good longtime listener and good friend Jessica mailed me some crystals.
Wow.
And what do you got? She gave it to me in this little package that says JY. Wow. She also gave me some sage if I want to do a seance. And oh, yes. And a better surprise is in January, you will have your own bag of crystals.
You legend, Jess. That is amazing. Pizza. Can we smoke that sage?
I think you might get a little sick, but you can try it, my man. She gave us each 4 crystals in a personalized bag. She sent a note saying she's a big fan of the A-Side, and she sent us a note of what each crystal does. She sent us citrine, quartz, tiger's eye, and... you guessed it, pyrite.
Yes. Oh, yes. Pyrite's been a favorite of ours. Read them again. There was another one there that perked it, that was in from...
citrine, quartz, tiger's eye, and pyrite.
Tiger's eye. I remember that one from the weekly feature that she's been doing for the crystals on the A-Side. Yeah.
And she said, I'm very interested. She sent us a complete breakdown of what each one does for us. Says, hope these help you and make you smile. And then she says, my IG is open my eyes to blue. So I'll give her a shout out. Jessica at IG at open my eyes to blue. Thank you so much for the crystals.
And she's got a beautiful dog too. I think we should point out. I think his name is Bean. I can't remember. But I was showing my girlfriend the other day and I was like, this is a beautiful dog. And we were in agreement. What a fabulous dog. Jessica, you're a legend. Crystal crew would be nothing without you, Jess. You're keeping us going here.
Yeah.
You're the engine of the crystal crew.
Hopefully Jared Cannonier gets on we can cover a show together with Jared Cannonier. I can bring him my 4 crystals, specifically my pyrite, because I know he'll appreciate that. So before we get into the questions, I have to give a shout out.
I just want to say, I think the only way to test Jared Cannonier's crystal awareness is to do a double blind test where he's completely blindfolded and we just put a crystal beside him and ask him what aura of what crystal is he feeling at the time.
Oh my good God. Crystal talk with Jared Cannonier, Jose Youngs, and Pete Carroll.
The double blind test with Tiger's Eye.
Well, before we got into the questions, I had to get that out of the way because we have some phenomenal fans. We have some phenomenal listeners. I tweeted that I was feeling sick. I don't know if people can hear. I'm a little under the weather after UFC Fight Week. For whatever reason, the media day is outside in a tent. And in Las Vegas, it's like 50-something, and I was cold and I got sick. And I tweeted that, and people were sending me which crystals to use.
Nice.
So we have our fans looking out for us, but enough crystal talk. I'm surprised I even said that. We're gonna have to get into the questions before people come after us, especially people on the site. Sorry, Brian. But love as you, Brian. Always, this is not our podcast. This is your podcast. You can leave your questions on the site, MMAfighting.com. Find the post that says the A-Side live now. You can leave your questions in the comment section, or you can use hashtag the A-Side on Twitter, and we'll get to them. Now, Pete, I looked at our questions a little bit before we got on. There are a lot.
You know I don't like to look at them. I like to go in bareback.
I I don't look at them what the content is. I just look at the number of questions. This might be a this might be a record for us.
All right.
So
okay.
This is question from a new commenter that I've never heard. This is a, and I'm reading, it's all one word.
Yes.
Australian Light Horse 1917 Beer Sheba Baby.
Is that a question or is that the username?
That is the username. Here's the question.
Oh, thank God for that. I was like, what the fuck just happened there?
Does anyone think Max should take a year off of fighting and devote himself to professionally and properly building up strength and power to go and battle the lightweights instead of hanging around the graveyard that is featherweight for him? He either beat them already or, with Alex, lost title too. A good solid 12-month or so plan should help him adjust correctly to lightweight and be able to compete competitively with them. If he doesn't, does his legacy start to downturn and he starts to accumulate losses and beatings? Being so skinny only worked when he was the tallest and longest and fittest. That won't help him if he's moving up as is. Max has been a great part of the game for many of us, and I'd hate to see him beat up, hurting his so far awesome record. So yes, excellent way to start off this episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Pizza Carol, I'm sure you watched, but Alexander Volkanovski dethroned who Joe Rogan calls the consensus greatest featherweight of all time. I don't know if you heard that in the post-fight interview. We have a new featherweight champion for the first time in a long time. There's no interim attached to his name. He is the reigning undisputed featherweight champion, Alexander Volkanovski. Another champion for City Dog, by the way. But as I'm not even going to try and pronounce this person's username again, but as this person asks us, should Max take some time off, bulk up, and get ready for lightweight, or should he get right back into it and rematch Volkanovski right away?
I'm really interested in the rematch, and you know, I understand that Holloway has had you know, trouble making 145. I guess that's been a thing that's constantly been talked about before all of his fights. But I think it's unfair to basically say that the only reason why he was so dominant for that long is because of physical attributes. You know, a lot of people, he is very tall, but he's not that long. His arms aren't actually that long. Like, remember when McGregor fought him, McGregor was shorter, but he had a longer reach. But I feel as though you're right in the sense that if he is going to go to 55, I think the Poirier fight showed us that there is a bit of a physical gulf that he needs to make up, like in terms of power and size and stuff like that. But I certainly wouldn't say the only reason why he was successful at featherweight because of physical attributes. He's a fantastic fighter, fantastically technical, and I think the big key to victory, I'm not breaking any news here for Volkanovski, was taking away his ability to switch stances with those leg kicks really early on. And I think if he had been able to switch stances, it would have been a lot more competitive fight, even though it was incredibly competitive. I do feel as though Volkanovski was really nicking the rounds at the last, you know, with his work in the exchanges, but I still feel as though it was a close fight. Like, you know, a fight can be like 50-45 and still be a close fight. 100%. A lot of people don't realize that in MMA, you know?
100%. And actually, Casey Lydon and I had that conversation where it was 50-45, but that is the true sense of those five rounds were the true sense of 10-9. Like, it was very close. I think Alexander Volkanovski was just one step ahead of Max the whole fight.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with 49-46, because that's how I scored it. I thought it was 4-1, but I don't have a problem with 5-0. And close fights aren't always robberies, as our own Alex K. Lee always says. Sure we'll talk about that with Jose and Marlon Moraes.
Was robbed! I'm sorry.
Wow. I'm sure we'll get there. You need to calm down, Pizzi. The crystals will get to you soon enough. But for me, if you're asking me what I would like Max to do, and I said this on Coffee Talk after UFC 245, I wouldn't hate to see him kind of do the Ronda Rousey approach, not in the sense of him just disappearing, but take 12 months off and then fight whoever is the champion when he returns. If it's Alexander Volkanovski, so be it. If Alexander Volkanovski somehow, say, loses to Zabit or Yair or Korean Zombie, then Max Holloway gets the first shot at the title when he returns. Simply because, like, he's fought in a lot lately. Dating back to December 2018, he did the four rounds against Brian Ortega. He did the five rounds against Dustin Poirier. He did the five rounds against Frankie Edgar. And he did the five rounds of Alexander Volkanovski. And even before he fought Brian Ortega, he was supposed to fight at UFC 226, and he fell out with those concussion-like symptoms, and he wasn't feeling 100%. So that's a lot of rounds inside the octagon and a lot of elite-level talent. Take some time off, and then whoever has the championship belt, fight them next. If you win, then you can rematch Volkanovski. But I would like to see Max take some time off, and if Volkanovski is ready to go, maybe he fights the winner. Maybe if Korean Zombie wins, he can fight Korean Zombie. I know Zabit's out there. He wants to fight. I like maybe to see Zabit fight Yair because they've been circling each other for a long time. Long story short, there's no shortage of fights at featherweight, and Alexander Volkanovski, who big-time Game of Thrones fan, by the way, is your new UFC featherweight champion. And from what I hear, he's a big Harry Potter fan.
Love Harry Potter.
Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. I've never seen the films, but I read all the books.
That is the correct answer. But we're going to – this question actually goes a perfect segue into longtime commenter Trumbo's question. Woo! Can we stop this debate now about the consensus greatest featherweight of all time? Max beat Aldo twice but lost the belt after three defenses. He had a 13-fight win streak, hugely impressive. Aldo had an 18-fight win streak, 10 of which were title fights, 9 of which were 5-round title defenses against number one contenders. Max is a great fighter, but for the featherweight go, it's not even close to the moment. Rogan needs to stop. On the same topic, since Alex Volkanovski beats Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, and Max Holloway all consecutively, does he now pass Conor McGregor on the list of greatest featherweights? Surely if he defends the belt, he would. So yes, we talked about it very, very briefly. What are your thoughts on this consensus greatest featherweight conversation of all time that Joe Rogan keeps bringing up?
Yeah, I get it. Look, I mean, it's annoying. But, I mean, people calling for Joe Rogan's head over this, like, calm the fuck. Every time I come onto Twitter on a Sunday morning after a UFC event, I feel like people are so outraged. They don't even care that they've watched some good fights. Like, no one's even like, well, what? There were some brilliant fights last night. Like, Joe Rogan is so wrong about this. And you're like, yeah, I know. He was probably wrong there. And, you know, he has to think in the moment. He's doing his thing on the microphone. Just calm the fuck down. He's done an awful lot for the sport as well. You know, I feel like we're calling for people's jobs all the time. I just don't like that shit. But, sorry, what were we talking about? The consensus greatest featherweight? Yeah, I feel like I always thought it was Aldo.
Same.
I always thought it was Aldo. So, I mean, I think with McGregor, the thing that McGregor did that nobody else could do, like, yes, all of these guys are fantastic fighters. The thing that he did was shine a spotlight on the division. I think that's what he did better than anyone else. He made these guys really relevant in terms of the international sport. He made it one of the most relevant divisions in the whole sport during his time there. So I think that's something that he brings to the table that none of the other ones do. But I think if you're just looking at it in terms of fighting, Aldo, by a long shot, is out there on his own.
I agree. Jose Aldo sits there on an island by himself. I put Max right there at number two. Three, I have Conor simply because he knocked out Jose Aldo and he did go on that tear. But Volkanovski could be right there at four. I mean, Chad Mendes, let's not forget what Chad Mendes did inside the octagon. He had that epic fight against Jose Aldo. I think you got to slot him somewhere in the top five as well. And if we're just
once USADA comes into it, though.
Yeah. But even if you're talking about just greatest featherweights, like UFC, like Uriah Faber was a longtime featherweight champion in the WEC before he dropped back down to bantamweight. So let's not forget his accolades at 145 pounds just because he's not in that division anymore. And Frankie Edgar's been doing great things at featherweight.
But those two guys being on Aldo's record makes him so good. Like, you know, it makes it so good. So it's like, yeah.
It is why I still consider Anderson Silva to be the greatest middleweight of all time. Mostly because we also haven't had a lot of defenses as of the middleweight belt since. I think Izzy could very well surpass him. I think Robert Whittaker is some up there, Rockhold, Weidman. But these guys didn't have those long reigns like...
Joan Elsey don't have...
What's up?
Bonds from USADA.
That's true. You do have to take that into consideration, but we're going to move right along to another weight class. What's next for Kamaru Nkolbe from Greb77? Great fight, but what's next for the champ? He's already beaten four of the top five, so does he fight Masvidal, rematch Leon Edwards, or GSP? And Nkolbe, will his stick change now that he has been humbled, or does he just continue? Who does he fight next? Steve Woodley. Now, before you answer your question, I do want to. Someone on Twitter, Brian Shea, who's a longtime listener, he's the digital editor of the Game Informer magazine. Go give him a find on Twitter. He tweeted at us a list of fights that he would like to see, which is very, I think, so I'm going to put this into one question. He goes, I don't have a question with so much debate about 170 after Saturday. Here's how I'm matching the top guys. Usman versus Edwards, Colby versus Woodley, Masvidal versus Conor. I'm assuming if Conor wins, the pieces just fall into place perfectly if Conor gets through Cowboy. The only problem could be Colby's recovery time. So I agree with those three fights completely. If Conor beats Cowboy, he will 100% fight Masvidal, I believe. That's why the fight is at 170. Usman, outside of you, did over the last few episodes of the A-side we've done together, Usman talked more about Leon Edwards than anyone has in the last 12 months this past week. Outside of Pete C. Carroll. At the fighter panel on Wednesday, as my voice cracks because I'm sick, at the UFC 245 fighter panel, someone asked all the fighters, who's the hardest opponent you ever had? And Kamaru Usman was like, Leon Edwards was the hardest opponent. He was so hard to break. Like, he likes to mentally and physically break his opponents. And he said he could not break Leon Edwards. And then after his fight at the post-fight press conference, someone was asking him what's next. He goes, I don't know. Leon Edwards is pretty deserving. He hasn't lost since he fought me. And he said something interesting that I was thinking too. Leon Edwards' position now is where Usman was 12 months ago. He's a guy that's on a long win streak. He's not tearing through guys. He's not this massive pay-per-view draw, but he's winning, so no one wants to fight him because the benefit, the risk completely outweighs the reward. So he brought up Leon Edwards again in the post-fight press conference. So, Pete C. Carroll, if you're the UFC matchmakers, I know you're a Bellator matchmaker and you do a great job of booking those fights.
If still not paid.
If you're booking the UFC welterweight division for the next few months, what are you looking to see?
I agree with this guy, and I'll tell you why. I think the reason why Usman is mentioning Masvidal in the post-fight press conference, albeit after he says that Edwards is deserving, is because he knows that the UFC see Masvidal and they see dollar signs. And like, if they can put him in a fight with Usman, it's going to make the most amount of money. It's going to make more money than the Leon Edwards fight, obviously. However, Conor McGregor v. Masvidal makes more money than that, again, than Usman. So the only problem is, can you wait till January 18th to book Leon Edwards on that London card for March 21st? You know, like, it feels, if you're, I mean, I guess it doesn't need to be March 21st if he's going to fight Usman for the title, I guess. But I do feel as though there's a lot of things hinging on this fight between Cerrone and McGregor. You know, also, I feel as though with Jorge kind of coming in, taking on Till, taking on Askren, and taking on Nate Diaz, you know, he has been taking on the guys with the most amount of heat. It's always been like a guy that has a good amount of buzz, and he goes in and knocks them out. So the narrative for McGregor kind of is upheld with the bad motherfucker narrative if he fights McGregor. But does McGregor beat Cerrone? That's a whole lot of shit to kind of bank on, you know what I mean? I think the fact that we haven't seen McGregor in such a long time, he didn't look great the last time we saw him, you know, can we bank on McGregor beating Cerrone and getting that Masvidal fight? Because what if he doesn't win and then you have Masvidal just there by himself? Do you book Usman then and leave Leon Edwards as the odd man out with nobody to fight? Because it's hard. I think it wouldn't be recommended to wait to see what happens with McGregor before you book these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And I think you had a pretty an excellent interview with Jack Hermanson on Eurobash, and he was teasing that the UFC made quote-unquote indications that they wanted that Till fight. So maybe they're booking that as the main event just in case. And Usman will get Edwards, and regardless, like,
I think the Crystal King Cannonier needs to be booked against Whittaker for the Till Hermanson fight to happen. Otherwise, why won't they just do Till and Whittaker?
Yeah.
Because Whittaker's the natural guy, the only natural guy without fighting the champion that Till can take a step up from Gastelum against, I think.
I agree. And for a guy, like, I don't know if you watched his little media appearance before the UFC 244 ceremonial weigh-ins, or after, because Darren Till was late, so he did a Q&A with the media after the weigh-ins. He said middleweight is interesting to him because it's filled with more strikers, as there's a lot of welterweights with wrestlers. So why would you give him Jack Hermanson, whose bread and butter is taking you down and ground and pounding you? So it's just, I agree. I like the Till Whittaker fight way more, but Conor McGregor's fight is gonna be the linchpin of a lot of bookings the next few months, even for fights outside of his weight class. It's very fascinating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw Darren at Bellator London. What date was that? That was late November, I think. And he was all about the Whittaker fight that night. You know, he was just kind of saying, I think it's going to happen. He wouldn't commit anything to the record, but he was just like, you know, I have a feeling it's going to happen. He was in great spirits, though. I mean, his team looked absolutely, you know, they were all in awe of that performance against Gastelum. I've never seen them all so collectively happy in my life, to be honest. It was massive, though.
Yeah, and that was a beautiful performance. Well, I won't say beautiful. It was a
Masterful.
It was a great performance. Winning a number one, supposedly a number one contender fight, and a fight I picked him against. But we're gonna move right along to a topic I know you want to talk about specifically from our longtime commenter, even dating going back to the Sean Alshadi Mark and Money days, Lodovic. Henry Cejudo's,
oh, thank you.
Henry Cejudo's belts. So Peter Yan annihilates Uriah Faber, whom Cejudo has been calling out, and Henry reacts with calling out Jose Aldo, who just lost a controversial decision. For those of you not watching right now, Pete Carroll's hands are literally up in the air right now. Just
I'm not very happy about this. I am not very fucking happy about this. Right, so
I get he wants to fight a big name, but is that the right move right now? I personally feel this kills the sport when a fighter who goes in there and wins in impressive fashion are told it didn't matter. What's your opinion? Who's next? Who's the next challenger for that 135-pound title? And what's next for the mentioned fighters? Also, what about flyweights? Is that still a thing in the UFC? Should Henry be stripped of the belt if he doesn't commit to a defense soon? So, yes, PC Carroll, you are on record. The last time you were on this channel, we talked about Peter Yan, and I said, if Uriah Faber wins, he could fight Henry Cejudo. You cut me off and said, he's not only not winning, he's going to retire after he fights Peter Yan. You said that not only is Yan going to decimate Uriah Faber, Uriah Faber's never going to fight again. I'm sure that fight went exactly as you expected.
Yes.
Peter Yan puts on the performance of a lifetime, head kicks Uriah Faber into oblivion in front of his wife and child. Or I don't know if they're married, but in front of his child.
Was that necessary to add that in?
gets in Cody Garbrandt's face backstage. And the whole time I'm thinking, PC Carroll must be loving this right now. So what did you make of Peter Yan's performance? And what do you make of Henry calling out Jose Aldo, who's coming off a loss?
Look, it's ridiculous, first of all. Henry Cejudo calling out Aldo. Look, I appreciate that some people thought Aldo won. I think I scored it for myself. Like, but we have to somehow stop just completely throwing the sport element of this company into the blender every time something happens that doesn't go the champion's way. This is fucking ridiculous. Like, the guy just lost a fight. He's only had one fight in the division. Why are we giving him a title fight? This is stupid. Oh, here's a guy from Russia. Just because he doesn't speak English, we're not going to give him a fucking fight? Like, he's killing everybody in the division. He's won fights in a year or something. What else do you need to do? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. How many more legends need to get head kicked into oblivion before we give this man a title shot? I think he's really good outside the octagon as well, and he doesn't get credit for it just because he doesn't have fluent English. That was hilarious with Cody Garbrandt. Like, yeah. Both of their energies were just perfect for each other to make that a great moment where he's like, you just do this, you just do
you
this.
You just do blah, 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 blah. That's what he says.
Yeah. I was crying. And Cody, I love that Cody's so emotional because he can't hide how much this is pissing him off, that this man in broken English is offending him in front of all these cameras. Look, Yan is box office. The only loss in his career isn't a real loss. Yeah. Like, he has never been beaten. The guy is incredible. You have to, like, look, if he doesn't want to fight him, that's fine. You know, it's going to happen inevitably, and Europe is going to take another title anyway. So, I mean, you're on bot time as it is, Cejudo, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
But I'm only messing. But I do feel as though the Aldo fight, you just can't do it. Like, I think Aldo is brilliant. We're just singing Aldo's praises, but to just throw him in a title fight because you don't agree with the officiator's decision is just ridiculous.
I agree. And the fact that Dana White said, I don't hate it, Henry Cejudo's the man right now, so he's calling the shots. I was like, no.
Why does he hate Europe? Why does he hate Europe? Why is Leon Edwards not getting a title fight? Why is Yan not getting a title fight? It's ridiculous. I'm sick
of
this.
And you said it yourself. We were talking before media day, and I didn't do the interview. Stephen Morocco did, and he asked him straight up, like, what do you make of the WADA ban for the country of Russia for the Olympics and the World Cup and everything? Like, does this make MMA now a bigger deal? Because as you know better than me, the Olympics and the World Cup are massive in Russia.
Huge.
And if they don't have that, who are they going to turn to? The athletes.
Habib,
Peter Yan. I know Fedor has a fight coming up. I'm sure that's obviously going to be a big deal in Russia. You got Zabit doing his thing. You got Makhachev supposedly going to fight Kevin Lee. Like, these Russian fighters are going to be the big deal now.
Yeah, and Askarov at 125 as well there. Like, I mean, Cejudo, you can go back down to 125, but we got another one there as well. So, I mean, what are we going to do here? We're going to have to dance eventually.
If I would like to see Henry Cejudo fight, either go down and fight Joseph Benavidez or vacate. I don't really care which one he does. At least let the flyweights go.
Yeah.
Let the flyweights go from this ransom. You could have Figueiredo and Benavidez fight for the interim title, and then you got Moreno had a phenomenal performance at UFC 245. Kai Kara of France, another New Zealand savage, is just lost. But that Esther Lynn thought that was actually the fight of the night, and I don't disagree. The only problem is it was too early on the card, and it was three rounds, and a title fight in the main event is always going to take precedent in Dana White's eyes. But let the flyweights go. Fight Peter Yan. If you don't want to fight Peter Yan, you want to do this Jose Aldo fight, then Peter Yan can fight, like, I don't know, Dominic Cruz or Aljamain Sterling. I know him and Cody Garbrandt says, if I win in Columbus, you're next. That's a little ways away. I don't want Peter Yan to wait that long. I believe that fight is in March, the Cody Garbrandt a Sun South fight. But Peter Yan should be the top contender at 135 pounds. I don't really think there's a debate at this point.
Yeah, the Siberian gangster, man. You got to love the guy. And I feel like he is working on his English as well, because I've been interviewing him for a long, long time. And even the sentences he was saying to Cody and stuff like that, like, that's, he's come a long way. And sometimes when I'm on the phone with his translator and his manager, Syed, who works with Danny Rube, he does, like, he'll get a few sentences out, you know, he will be able to answer some questions in English. So, I mean, I think he's going to be brilliant when he can speak fluent English, because whenever he's answering my questions through the translator, he's usually in a room full of fighters and everyone's crying. Like, everyone in the room is pissing themselves laughing. So I think he's going to be a really great ambassador for the sport, and a big thing in Russia when he can get pushed into these big spots, like we're talking about against Cejudo.
I agree. It drives me nuts that he might not get the next shot. But regardless if he gets the next shot or not, he should get a big name. Like, if Frankie Edgar drops down, if Frankie Edgar gets past the Korean Zombie and then somehow drops down to 135 and fights Corey Sandhagen a month later, then give him that fight too.
All right. Well, like, I mean, if it's not going to be Cejudo, let him and Aldo fight for number one contender. I'd rather see that than let Aldo fight for the title, to be honest.
Or let Jan fight Marlon Moraes. Marlon Moraes won. I think Aldo should fight Uriah Faber at 135. Rematch from the WBC days.
That's a great fight.
That should have been the fights. Should have been Aldo Faber and Moraes Jan. That should have been the fights at 245. Then you run into this situation where Jose Aldo loses to a guy that's not getting a title shot anytime soon, and then Cejudo calls out Aldo anyway. It doesn't make sense. If Jan had beaten Marlon Moraes, or then right there, number one spot. It just it drives me.
I hate when it's that obvious, because we said this the week it was fucking booked. Do you know what I mean? We were like, this is ridiculous. This is stupid, man. Like, and look, and now we're in a conundrum. Why don't you just listen to us, UFC?
Yeah, I mean, we do. PC does a great job for Bellator. Let us do.
I mean, my CV speaks for itself.
Moving along, because we're going to talk. We could talk about Henry Cejudo forever. From Ted Bear, another longtime commenter dating back from the Al-Shadi Raymond days, maybe even dating back all the way to the Luke Thomas days. Will Cowboy retire after the Conor fight? He's 50 fights deep into his MMA career, a family man now, supposedly engaged or married to a future doctor, and about to receive some FU money. Does he retire? No. I don't think Cowboy is the only thing that's going to make Cowboy retire is death. He'll try to fight even if he has his leg cut off.
That man is not going to die in his bed. Put it that way.
Nope.
And you know what I mean? so it's gonna be like, they're gonna have to force him to retire inevitably. Like, I feel like that's going to happen. Someone's gonna have, like, a lot of every, like, they're gonna have to basically have an intervention with him to stop fighting. That's what's gonna have to happen there.
I agree. I'll save it for my promo, but Mike Perry and I had a nice little chat at Media Day.
Oh, the friendliness ensues.
And he was talking to me about his anxiety before the fight, and he said before every fight, he thinks about, like, what if this plane crashes? What if this car crashes? Will the injury be severe enough to keep me from fighting? And Mike Perry's like, no injury will be severe enough to keep me from fighting. And I think that's Cowboy's exact mentality too. But we're going to keep going. There's a lot. Jones from Zakuko Keggy, another longtime commenter. Jones move up to heavyweight in 2020. If John Jones does move to heavyweight, does he get an immediate title shot? Regardless of titles, who would you like to see him fight first in the heavyweight division? The answer is yes. If John Jones moves up to heavyweight, not only will he get a title shot right away, he will deserve a title shot right away. I think if a reigning champion changes weight classes, they skip the line. That's just my... If Jose Aldo was the featherweight champion and decided to drop down to 135 while he was a champion, he should automatically skip the line because he is a champion. If Henry Cejudo did it, Conor McGregor did it, if Ronda had decided to go up to 145, if that existed, she would get the number one contender spot. Like, it, to me, if you are a champion, you change weight classes, you skip the line. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. Am I most excited to see Jones v. Stipe as a matchup? I think that's a different question, but I feel like you got to give him the title shot as soon as he goes up, if that's the question. I'd love to see Ngannou v. Jones. If it was any fight at heavyweight, that would be the fight I'd pick. Just the raw power of Ngannou, I'd love to see it. And that's no knock on Stipe. It's just the style matchup that I'm interested in.
How about this, though? Jones versus Rumble at heavyweight.
That'd be fucking crazy. Yeah,
I want that fight. If John Jones doesn't get a shot at the title right away, then Jones v. Rumble at heavyweight. Though Rumble did say he was at the quintet. I don't know if you watched any of that of the grappling.
No, I watched the interview you guys did, though.
It was pretty interesting. It was like UFC versus Strikeforce versus WC versus Pride, Team UFC 1. A lot of interesting matchups. Like Sean O'Malley, like they were showing the breakdowns, and like Sean O'Malley tapped Gomi. And then had to immediately grapple Hector Lombard, who's looking massive right now.
Judo black belt as well.
If Gomi had won, he would have to immediately grapple Rumble Johnson. We could have seen Gomi versus Rumble Johnson grappling, and it was a lot of fun. Enjoyed it.
Do you know what's a good fight for Johnson? Because he's been out for a while, right? Like, I mean, he has been out for a significant amount of time. When was his last fight? 2016?
No, I think it was 2017 when he fought DC at UFC 210.
Why don't they do fucking like Cyril Gane versus fucking Anthony Johnson for the main event of UFC Paris? Because I hear they're trying to do their first event in Paris in November. So like that would be a great fight to be the top of that bill, but you could do Ngannou.
Why wouldn't you put Francis Ngannou in that main event?
Yeah, it's just like if he does somehow get the title before then, I just think it's unlikely they put a title fight on a European card unless they can put it on pay-per-view schedule. Like the only times they've really done it, I know, like recently would be Bisping Henderson. Versus Henderson and Manchester, yeah.
I like that fight, but I was at the Dominance MMA Media Day and Rumble's basically coming back for big fights. I don't think Cyril Gane is going to be a big fight for him. I like that fight, but he wants like the Ngannous, the Stipes,
this time next year in November, if France, like, it's going crazy in France at the moment. You don't understand. It's like all these fighters are coming out, like the woodwork, like they've been around for ages, but they just suddenly all have this massive attention on them. Like Saladin Parnasse in KSW, Morgan Charrier. Like, I can't get over that guy's fan base. He apparently is friends with a lot of YouTube sensations in France, but he came over to Cage Warriors and knocked out, like, the former champion, Dean Truman, who's a great fighter. He knocked him out, and, I mean, all these guys seem to be bubbling right to the surface as UFC looks to be entering the potential market eventually when it does get legal. I think French MMA is going to have big, broad ramifications on the international scene, so let's wait to see what happens by the time that fight gets around. I think Cyril Gane is going to be a bigger name in that neck of the woods than Ngannou is, purely because he represents France, while Ngannou represents Cameroon. You know what I mean?
I agree. I don't disagree. And I know you do a great job of selling European fights, but goddamn, I am so excited for the Paris. I am so excited for the French scene to finally hit the mainstream now, literally just based off of doing the A-side with you.
But it's really interesting because it's a big race now for the different promotions to be the first one to put on an event. Like, I'm sure there's going to be regional events and stuff, but to be the first kind of international event in Paris, I know I spoke about it last time. Aries just had their first event at the weekend in Senegal. A fantastic guy called Rug, a Senegalese wrestling champion, absolutely brutalized Sofian Bakashu. You should check it out. It's on Fight Pass. You need to watch this guy, Rug, unbelievable. Like, just smashing people on their heads from Kimuras and all. And it's his first fight ever. So Aries have a huge TV deal, so they have massive financial backing. But their main kind of front man is Coach Fernand Lopez, who manages and coaches Cyril Gane, and who has previously coached Francis Ngannou. So I feel like they're going to be trying to be the first guys to have that event in France. They have a lot of French talent on the card too, so it makes a lot of sense. I just feel as though UFC will want to be the first ones to do a big event there, but they do have rivals trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, they don't have what they don't have going for them is UFC 205, when they had the first MSG card. There was obviously everyone wants to be the first ever big card in New York City after the ban was lifted. what the UFC had going for them was they did more work with the government, like sending fighters to like speak in front of representatives. Like, they canvassed the town, they put in the legwork to get it legalized. So I feel like Madison Square Garden said, like, oh, we kind of owe the UFC because they're really the ones that took the baton and ran with it. They don't really have that in France, do they?
They're like, no. Yeah. It's a massive political issue as well. Like, from what I'm hearing, like, and this happens to MMA, as you know, in the inception of MMA in the US, it was, the creation, like, you have all these traditional martial arts kind of trying to push it back. Judo, for instance, is huge in France, and they're meant to be having big issues with MMA becoming legal. That's why it has been moved from January to February already. Some people are anticipating even more stoppages there. But, to be fair, I feel like the fighters have been the people, and the likes of Fernand Lopez, who have been talking with big publications like Equipe. We've talked about them before on here, a huge French-speaking publication. Those are the guys that are really getting the word out about MMA and kind of being the big evangelist for it over there. So maybe, as you're saying, that will put them on the first rung of the ladder as opposed to the UFC to put on that first event.
Well,
I'll take us into a European rabbit hole once again there. Sorry about that.
All I know is when that fight card happens, Pizza Carroll should freaking be there.
Yeah, I can't speak French, but I mean, I look French.
Dude, I'll go. I've always wanted to go. I've always wanted to go to Belgium.
Belgium is not in France.
Is it not? Where's Belgium?
It's a different fucking
whatever
country.
That's what I mean. No, I'm thinking of... No, Brussels is Belgium, right? Where's Brussels? Yeah. That's what I'm talking. I've always wanted to go to Brussels, which is in Belgium. They speak French. That's what I'm talking
That's
about.
True. That is true. That is true.
So you know. I know my geography.
I don't.
We're going to hop over to Twitter. All right. Dang. Oh, Sean Denny, how far could Aries FC's newest star Rug throw you, Pizza Carroll?
Miles, man. He was just, right, so Sofian Bakashu is he's established heavyweight. Like, he fought Tom Aspinall, who just signed for the UFC from the same gym as Darren Till. Like, Rug was just like, he was trying to Kimura him, and he just smashed him on his head a few times. Like, no, bang, bang, bang. Like, it looks like it looked like Bakashu was getting hit with a holy ghost, man. Every time he hit him from anywhere, he was like, Jesus Christ. You could just see his face. And I'm talking about just hammer fists and ground and pound. Like, he's got to check him out, man. He's unbelievable.
So, Rug, and who is the one you spoke about last time, KSW?
Saladin Parnas. He is unbelievable. He had the fight I told you all to watch. Yep. He was absolutely unbelievable.
I watched it, just based off what you said. So, Pizza Carroll should get a little bit of that, grease the palms for that scene over there.
And Morgan Charrier is the other guy in Cage Warriors you need to watch out for. I'd say he'll be fighting for the Cage Warriors title in his next fight probably, so worth watching
him. You heard it here, folks. Sticking on Twitter, Valentino Saifedean Tarhan, I don't know if I pronounced that right, with Conor versus Cowboy fight in 30 days, isn't it really strange we haven't got any press conference or any media for the fight? Is there a reason why? Feels like there's no hype for it. Do you two know of any press conferences or media coming up to the fight? So yeah, Pizzi, I was really surprised that there was the UFC 247 press conference in Las Vegas with John Jones, Dominic Reyes, Valentina Shevchenko, and Callum Chookagian, and all fans were tweeting at me was, why isn't Conor and Cowboy there? And I said, maybe Conor can't enter the country. I don't honestly know. I didn't really look into it. Maybe he doesn't want to do it. Maybe he's pulling the Ronda Rousey approach where he's doing less media. I know at UFC 202, I felt the same way before the Nate Diaz fight, landing and touching down in Las Vegas. And I've talked about this on this show before. Didn't feel like a big fight week until they start throwing water bottles at each other. So
yes,
I say to Valentino, Saifedean, and Tarhan, wait until they're actually in the same room together, and then it'll feel like a big fight week.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, no real clarification on why it didn't happen, but I mean, I think it's safe to say that, like, I mean, we have our suspicions regarding the court case, etc. If he could come in and out of the country, so that might have been a reason. But I think it's full steam ahead for the fight anyway. And look, it hasn't. Look, Conor's stock has took massive knocks since the last time we've seen him in there. But he does have an incredible aura to him, you know, and he has ever since I've met him when he was like 19, 20. When he walks into a room, it's like he sucks all the energy onto himself. I mean, it's impossible to look really anywhere else once the guy enters a room. I'm sure it's going to be captivating for the right or wrong reasons. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be interested as soon as it takes off. And look, me and Jose have said that about 202 before. One of the highest grossing fight cards ever. And we were outside the place going, Jesus, not a lot of talk about this one. But I can tell you in Ireland, you know, we're getting into the silly season here. And we're all kind of meeting people for a few Christmas drinks here and there. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that have said to me they don't know, they didn't know that Conor was fighting next month. They're like, what?
You never, yeah, no. I ran into people that, like, as a casual, I have friends that are casual fans, and they would know when Conor was going to fight. Like, you would be amazed at how many old high school friends that I hadn't talked to in maybe 10 years text me asking for betting advice on Khabib Conor. And my first response was always, I'm good, how are you? But none of that is happening this time. No one's texting me about it. No one's outside of the normal fans. But it's, I say, wait until they're in the same room again, because as PT said, it felt the same way until water bottles and monster cans started being flung around UFC 202.
Oh, you know, it was, well, at the event at the weekend, when they played the promo reel for the first time, it didn't get the same, you know, you expect to see when it's a Conor promo. I was at the, was it Gustafsson and Cormier fight that was just before the Mendez-McGregor fight, and I can remember they played the promo for that on the screen, and I fucking thought the world was going to end. It was just unbelievable. Was it Anthony Johnson maybe then and Daniel Cormier, something like that? It was meant to be Jones and Daniel Cormier, and then Jones obviously got pulled.
You're thinking of UFC 187 was supposed to be Rumble and John Jones, and then John Jones got John Jones hit that woman, the hit and run, and then they pulled Jones from it, and then Cormier was supposed to fight Bader in New Orleans. They pulled DC to fight Rumble a month early, which was at UFC 187, which was also had Weidman Vitor and was also supposed to have Don Cerrone versus a young undefeated Russian named Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yes, that one. And they played the fucking promo at that, and I felt like the ground was gonna open and swallow me. Like, do you know what I mean? It was like, like people going fucking crazy. And then I can remember just watching it like on the broadcast and going like, this doesn't feel big at all, you know, it really doesn't.
It's also Conor was still on that unbelievable run. He was fighting the greatest featherweight ever for the title. They were doing all that press. Like, Conor fighting Cowboy at 170 means very little to me in a competitive sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to get him back to competition is the main thing. Like, I think that's to get the, can we get the wheels in motion again, basically, you know what I mean?
And poor Justin Gaethje just sitting there waiting for the title shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we all could have matched the fight, I think Gaethje would have been top of the list for the McGregor's comeback fight. But I do think Cerrone, like, I'm not completely against Cerrone fight. I think it's a winnable fight for McGregor that still has the illusion of competition to it, you know?
I agree. And he has all the records, so you know the UFC is going to point at all those if he does win. But moving along from Strike MX NYC, Jose, glad to have Pete Carroll back this week with Yoel.
Thank you. Everybody say that. When you comment when I'm on the show, everyone make Jose say, isn't it great to have Pete back? Because it will really annoy him.
I'm just gonna hold my pyrite and ward off my negative energy. Anyway, with Yoel and possibly Aldo getting title shots off losses, and Conor getting a rematch with a win at getting a rematch with Khabib with a win at 170, can we all just accept that the UFC is not a meritocracy and enjoy having some fun super fights? Hashtag the A side. So. Interesting take. Hadn't really thought about that. I think
let's book Cejudo and Aldo. Fuck it. You know, like what? I don't like that. I'm sorry. I understand that this isn't a classic sport. It's not a traditional sport. But some meritocracy has to matter. Like Leon Edwards, it's a disgrace that they just keep leaving him out of the conversation. It's just a joke. You know what I mean? Like we need to give some kind of, we need to highlight the sporting element to keep the growth of the sport going, because over here in Ireland they just keep using this shit against us. Every time we're invited on mainstream kind of show or anything, they're like, what's this bad motherfucker title, huh? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like, I mean, it doesn't help us. I get that it's fun, but that's not in the interest of the growth of MMA, I don't think.
I think the Yoel one is a little different because supposedly Paulo Costa is hurt or had bicep surgery. So Yoel Romero, who just lost is still the next man up. Like, cross Paulo Costa off, who's the next one in line? Yoel Romero. If Jared Cannonier had another win, then maybe it would be him. Maybe it would be if Hermanson had won, it would be him. But Yoel's a different Yoel, I will accept, because there's another fight. There's another question about that coming. I'll save that. And then Aldo getting a fight against Henry Cejudo is infuriating to me, and I hate everything about it. And I love Jose Aldo, and I think Henry Cejudo's a phenomenal champion. His bend the knee thing is getting a little annoying, but I get it. I just want to see him fight Joseph Benavidez or give the flyweight title. And then Connor will not get a rematch with Khabib right away. Khabib's been saying that. I don't know if you've seen all the Russian interviews he's been doing. He won't even say Connor's name. He'll say the other guy. He'll say Tony Ferguson had to win 10 in a row, and the other guy hasn't won in like 5 years.
But you got to listen to what Connor's camp is saying. I know we haven't got a lot of talk from him, but we did. We definitely got a fucking word with them. And what are they saying? They're saying next he wants to fight Masvidal.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Dana wants to do or what Khabib doesn't want to do. He wants to fight Masvidal. Going back to the first question we had today, you know, a lot's riding on this fucking fight here for Conor. You know what I mean? So I don't think he fights for the title next. I think he will try to fight Masvidal. I think that's the only reason why he's fighting Cerrone at 170. He wants to make the most money he can, and he probably makes more money fighting Masvidal than he does Khabib. Maybe.
Oh, it's maybe not. I think the Khabib one would be bigger for international markets, but Jorge Conor would really...
For U.S. dollar?
Yeah, would really get that going. And outside of all the nonsense that fight is going to create and generate, that fight is just fun to watch. Like, I like that fight as like
a great style matchup.
I like that fight just as a fight fan. That's just high level violent martial arts. It's going to cause a lot of chaos and a lot of drama. It's probably going to be another non-title fight, headliner pay-per-view. I don't care. I don't mind non-championship fights, headliner pay-per-views, as long as it's a high-quality fight. Because I've been saying for like 10 years, I want Robbie Lawler and Nick Diaz to headline a pay-per-view, part two. That's never going to happen anytime soon. But I don't hate non-title fights headlining pay-per-views.
Yeah, and I don't fancy Conor's chances against Masvidal, but I think I agree with you on all those fronts.
Moving along from the gates of Rob on Twitter. Is it hard to deny the crowd backed Colby Covington at UFC 205? It's not hard to deny. I think he got a very lukewarm reception when he entered the octagon.
Even watching on the broadcast, I was like, wow, this is like... Because at home, I'm buzzing for the fight. And then it's coming on. I'm like, why are the crowds so low energy here? This is huge. This is a big title fight, you know? But I guess two title fights before it, they might be a bit exhausted. So I'm not gonna completely rag on the Las Vegas casuals.
Well, he walked out to Kurt Angle's entrance song from the WWE, which I know you are the resident professional wrestling expert.
Yeah.
In the WWE, when Kurt Angle's song plays, the whole crowd chants, "You suck," over and over and over and over. That was not the case. Like, no one chanted anything. I felt like the joke fell flat. And when Kamaru Usman walked out, he walked out to "Anybody" by Burner Boy. And that song rips. That song is so good. And the crowd was like alive for that. Like, Israel Adesanya danced the whole time because it is a Nigerian song. So the crowd was alive for that. No one really cared about Colby Covington. His entrance, in New Jersey, I remember hearing it through the crowd through the TV when he fought Robbie Lawler. But that's much more of a hardcore scene out there in Newark. But I was talking to Casey on Coffee Talk, and it really felt like at the end of the week, people didn't hate Colby for what he was saying. They were just over it. They were just tired and exhausted, and like, okay, we know what you're gonna say, like Trump 2020. I'm gonna bring the belt to the White House. You're all nerds and virgins. Epstein didn't kill himself. That's all he was gonna say, and that's all he did say. And it felt like by fight week, we're just like, I don't even care who wins. I'm just tired of this.
I went up to see one of my friends. Sans, shout out. You'll be watching this. I love you. But he thinks this Colby stuff is funny. You know what I mean? Like, he's you know, he's from a family of immigrants himself. He shouldn't really, but you know, it's far away from us. So it's like we don't feel the same political ramifications, I guess, when he's saying these things. We don't really understand what he's shouting about some of the time. And then he was doing that thing they did with Megan O'Leary. And this was not Megan O'Leary's fault or anything, but it just didn't. It wasn't great. Like, we turned it off. You know, where we thought it was going to be a bit of, it was rubbish. Like, so I agree with what you're saying. Like, I mean, he couldn't keep my attention for 10 minutes there that day, and I do this for a living, like, you know what I mean? So that's what I always felt about it too.
It was, I was just tired of it. And that fighter Q&A panel, I liked the idea.
Yeah, it just didn't work with those people.
It just, I wanted Colby and Kamaru on the stage together. I didn't want them, I didn't want challengers and champions. What I will say, it was really, really excellent for fighters like Volkanovski and Jermaine Duranemi, where fans don't know a lot about them, like their personal lives, because they live on, especially in America, they live on the other side of the world. Like, Volkanovski, I think, came off excellent in that. Like, he defended Nerds and Virgins against Colby Covington. He was really, he was a funny guy. Jermaine came off like the sweetest person in the world.
She was great.
She was like, if you beat Amanda, you're the greatest fighter, female fighter of all time. She's like, no, I'm just Jermaine. Like, I love that answer. But
she's deadly. I really like Jermaine.
But yeah, Colby and Kamaru should have been on stage together. That's what is really missing. Also, I don't know this to be certain, but I bet the UFC did this because the last few fight cards, not a lot of people have worked out. They've kind of walked out there and did a Q&A with the fans rather than hit pads. I know UFC 243 in Australia had some awesome workouts, but Khabib didn't work out, Masvidal didn't work out, Diaz didn't work out, Kelvin didn't work out, Darren Till wasn't even there, John Jones never works out anymore, but all six fighters there at UFC 245 would have worked out, and they would have put on a great workout. So I like watching fighters hit mitts. I'll watch them work out all the time. I like the Q&A thing. I just wish they had tweaked a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, and I do agree with you, Jermaine. Everyone did really well, but it's like a lot of people are tuning in to see Colby Covington there because he's this the main event, and it just didn't deliver for whatever reason. Now, his work inside the octagon was absolutely tremendous.
Right,
I can't praise him enough for that. But I do agree that it was just getting a bit old. You know,
I was burnt out. I just felt like he was reading like a script, and I was just tired of it. But anyway, moving on, back to the site from Matt the Donk. I can't skip over Matt the Donk's questions. He's been a long-time Matt concert. The Donk. Adesanya versus Romero at UFC 248. I don't think it's official at all, but I've heard the rumors. What do you all think of this fight? I'll start this, Pizzi. I don't know if you watched our interview with Jorge Masvidal at UFC 244 as I continue to die on camera. Jorge Masvidal, the last question I asked him, I go, what do you think about the possibility of this fight? And I didn't really care about this fight. I'm like, it feels like...
Brilliant.
Feels like, yeah, Romero is just the next one up rather than the most deserving contender. And then Jorge Masvidal like looked at me like, and he got amazing, real serious. And he goes... And he told me a story of Adesanya coming up to him in a club and being like, I have to fight Romero. I know he's your boy, but he's the scariest guy in the division, and my legacy won't be complete until I beat him. And Jorge Masvidal was like, I don't think anyone has ever asked to fight Yoel Romero. They get forced to fight Yoel Romero, and their bodies are never the same after. And Jorge Masvidal talking about that and just getting so intense about it. And you know him and Romero are boys. Like, Masvidal's on record saying, if Yoel Romero calls me and says we got to work, I'm flying back to Florida to work. I don't care about media obligations. I asked him, I go, does Romero beat Izzy? And he goes, I don't know. I don't know. Great. Like, the fact that even Jorge Masvidal can't say that one of his close friends would beat Izzy sold me more on that fight than any countdown, any promo package, any interview. And then I showed, because Casey was doing the rounds with Danny and I was doing stuff with Masvidal, I showed him that clip, and Casey was like, I am, not only am I sold, the UFC has to get Masvidal to do the voiceover for the countdown. They have to,
like,
do
it. Like Bourdain back in the day?
Yeah. Like, he goes, because he's like, Joel, like how he says it like a Latino. He goes, Joel and Izzy, they have to fight. It's for the greatest middleweight of all time. I was like, oh my God, Jorge Masvidal, I'm sold.
Why don't we cut them the audio and they can give us $5 million or something and we all go our separate ways? I mean, you know?
Nice doing business with you. But I love that fight. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do. I love it. And you're dead right, man. That was amazing. That was in circulation for weeks after that as well. When you put it out, people were just kept finding it. It was like, holy shit, look at this. Yeah, it was brilliant. What was the actual question? Are we just talking about how great that was when Jorge did that? Because
the question is pretty much, what do you think of the fight?
Yeah, do it. I want to see the fight. You know, like, I mean, it's not like it's like, oh yeah, we need someone to fight Izzy. Like, it's a great style matchup. I mean, the one question that people keep asking about Izzy is him on the ground. Jack Hermanson thinks he's a better man to test that than Yoel Romero, not because he's a better wrestler than Yoel Romero, is because he goes, I go crazy watching Yoel Romero fight because he doesn't try to take people down.
It's unbelievable. And I'm like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what he said. He goes, I could probably test him more. I don't know if I could take him down more, but I could probably test him more because I will actually try to take him down. But yeah, I'd love to see Yoel in there and really trying to attack him from different angles with takedowns. That's the fight we want to see. If you stand up with Izzy, it's not going to go well for you. It just isn't going
to
go well for you.
I don't know anyone in the middleweight division that would hold a candle to Izzy on the feet. I thought Whitaker would be the guy. We saw that happen. Till, yeah. I think Till's got to get a little bigger first. I remember there was an interview with Dustin Poirier. I can't remember who the interview was, but it was on the site, and he said that it took him two or three fights to feel like a lightweight rather than a featherweight, just not cutting weight. Does that make sense?
But, yeah, no, absolutely. I do agree with you, but I think, again, people put too much weight on power and things like that. Like, if you look at the Gastelum fight, it's an amazingly technical fight from Till. The distance control there is beautiful, and I think that's what Stylebender is fantastic at as well. Just keeping guys on the end of his punches where they can't hit him. I think it would be it would probably be more like Till v Wonderboy. You know what I mean? It would be such a chess match, but it would be so interesting. Like, I was at Till v Wonderboy, and the tension in the room was unbelievable.
Oh, it felt like someone was going to get knocked out at any moment.
Yeah. Like, when Wonderboy went down in the last round or something, or the fourth round or fifth round, I can't remember what it was just felt like the lungs of the arena collapsed, you know, because they were like, ah!
The only problem is Till missed weight, and that kind of puts a cloud on it for me. But
that was funny for me, watching people getting so upset with Aldo last week, and I was like, you guys were watching Till die the week he fought in Liverpool and didn't give a fuck until the video came out a week later, and you're like, this is wrong. Oh, we're outraged again.
And Aldo didn't even need a towel. He got up on there with a smile on his face.
And fought like a fucking champ for three rounds.
Did you think, you thought he won?
Yeah, well, I wasn't emotional about it. I was like, you know, this could go either way. Like, I mean, I often feel like that. I don't attach myself to a result because I'm like, this is a close fight. It could go either way.
Sure.
Like, in my head, I was... Now, bear in mind, it's like 4:30, 5 a.m. when we're watching these fights. Even Holloway and Volkanovski, I'm so tired at that stage. I'm like, maybe this is closer than I think it is. Even though I did think Volkanovski was winning every round, I'm like, it's so close. Maybe I'm missing a few beats here that are giving the rounds to Holloway, because the commentary was a bit confusing as well at times.
You mean Joe Rogan was biased? Shocking.
Listen, leave Joe alone.
Real quick, Clev21, Rory McDonald to PFL. Your thoughts?
Rory McDonald going to Bellator brought a lot of interest to Bellator in this part of the world, like a big name going there. So I do see the value in that. Like, I mean, at the moment, the people in the UK and Ireland are only tuning into PFL to watch Brendan Loughnan and then nothing else. You know what I mean? They're watching Brendan and there's no other reason to tune in. Someone like, well, not to say there's no other reason. It's just no one's compelling the interest enough to make people watch fights in the middle of the night on Thursday. You know what I mean? So it's, I think it's a good sign. And shock, though.
Didn't see that coming at all. Rory McDonald's throwing himself into another tournament. He joined welterweight and immediately got thrown into a tournament. Bellator got immediately thrown into a tournament. And now he's getting thrown into PFL, another Grand Prix. So,
goddamn Christian.
He should be the favorite. I can't think of anyone else who I would favor over him in PFL now that Douglas Lima's not there, just chasing him down. But great signing for PFL. But I think I did not see this coming. Is he the first fighter to fight in all three promotions? Bellator. I'm sure he's not, but I can't think of one off the top of my head at the moment.
No, I can't. I'm trying my best.
I'm sure he's not. If someone knows the answer, tell me. But he might be the biggest name to fight in all three.
Yeah, I'd say so. Oh, without a doubt, I'd say. Yeah.
I'm not 100%. I could be completely wrong.
But he's got to be the biggest name that's fought in all three, surely.
I mean, he's been in the greatest fight, what many people consider the greatest fight of all time the UFC fight of all time against Robbie Lawler. Was a champion of Bellator. Went all the way to the finals of the Grand Prix. Came up short in a rematch, and I do. The only downside is there are a lot of fights at Bellator. I wish he could have gotten that trilogy against Douglas Lima, and I wanted to see him in an MVP fight. I really wanted that fight. That would have been a fun fight for me.
I mean, even when he left the UFC, there was fights I probably would have watched in there as well. But these things happen.
But we're running up on time. I'm gonna do one last peruse through Twitter. A lot of the questions on Twitter we got.
Someone just sent us. Jose Aldo v. Justin Gaethje as spoken by Brett Okamoto. Thoughts? I don't even know what that means.
That,
but I agree with you. I don't know what that
is. Is that
means.
True?
I don't know. It's just some...
And what weight class? A lightweight? Come on. Okay.
I don't know. This guy's just... That's the only one I can see, and I don't know what it means.
All right. Did you watch that video Aldo put out with him in the gun, like calling out Cejudo?
Yeah, it seemed a bit out of character.
So that here's a question from Baby Yoda Jr. on Twitter. Who cut a better promo? Cejudo with his bend the knee stuff, Colby Covington with the MAGA gimmick, or Jose Aldo with the video he posted yesterday? Personally, I think Aldo did it better even though it was in Portuguese.
I mean, like, honestly, who was the biggest ramifications? Probably Colby, like, because he was going to get cut from the UFC before he started that bullshit.
If you look at our numbers, and we talked about this on the preview show with Steven Morocco, if you look at just the YouTube numbers, Colby Covington dwarfed everybody. Even the fighter the Q&A panel, the fighters, the panel with the contenders, so Colby, Volkanovski, Jermaine, blew the numbers away for Kamaru, Holloway, and Nunes, who, according to Joe Rogan, the greatest featherweight ever. I think it's pretty safe to say Nunes is the greatest female fighter ever. And then Kamaru Usman, who's fighting Colby Covington. And then the scrum of Colby, like, tripled Kamaru Usman's scrum, the numbers. So I would say whether you hate it or love it, Colby Covington's gimmick did a lot more in terms of, like, fan interest.
Well, whether you hate it or love it, you're acknowledging that his promo had an impact on you.
Exactly, so, I mean, and we're talking
about
Unless
you've never heard of it, you know what I mean? If you haven't heard of it, that's fair enough. It's not the best one for you, but we all have, so I got to go with him.
Jessica wants to know if we will be at UFC Columbus. Maybe. I know Damon Martin will probably be there. He lives out there in the great state of Ohio, who I think Jessica I is from there. She said that maybe 10 or 100 times, and I think Matt Brown will be there. I can't imagine they're not going to put Matt Brown on a card in Ohio, so that fight card could be awesome. Right now, main event, Francis Ngannou versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I want to go just as a fan because I love that fight, but I doubt...
All European action there.
It's true, in Columbus, Ohio. I doubt PC Carroll will fly all the way from Ireland to go to Columbus, but...
I would have loved to go over and teach some of them boys how to wrestle, to be honest with you.
Honestly. Honestly, I bet Damon will be there, and maybe Alex Savas, video editor extraordinaire, maybe she'll go. She lives in Chicago. I would love to go, but that's all the way out in March. We got to get through a lot of fights before we can even think about March, in my mind. But I can't see any other questions. So, as usual, Pizza Carol, the floor is yours for whatever you want to talk about. Have at it.
Okay. In 2020, all your belts are in big trouble, the rest of the world. Listen to this. I wrote this down just so I know what I'm talking about here. 115, Joanna is fighting for the title. 125, Jojo Calderwood, Molly McCann on a 3-fight win streak. 125, male fighters, Askar Askarov got off to a start with a draw. He's fighting Tim Elliott on the same card that McGregor returns at. That will be interesting. 135, Piotr Jan. 145, Zabit. 155, Habib. 170, Leon Edwards. 185, Darren Till and Jack Hermanson. 205, Jan Blachowicz. 265, Cyril Gane. A lot of trouble coming your way, guys. So I just want to let you know that we can come back to this at the end of next year and go, told you, the Irish boy told you again.
So
that's all I want to say.
Of those names, who's going to be champion by the end of 2020?
I don't know if they'll be champions by the end of 2020, but who will be champions this next year potentially? I feel like Joanna has a good chance. Obviously, 100%. She's fighting Wiley Zhang, even though Wiley is incredible. I feel Zabit has a chance against Volkanovski.
Yeah, that's a crazy looking matchup.
Yeah, Piotr Jan, you know how I feel about that, man. Askar Askarov, he's too far away. He's not going to be touching that belt in 2020. Habib will keep his title. That's a title for us. Leon Edwards is a hard fight. If he fights with a belt at 170, he's going to give Usman some trouble.
Sure.
He's going to give Usman more trouble than Tyron Woodley gave Usman. 185, if Till beats Hermanson, he's probably going to fight for the title. Mm-hmm. I think I favor Stylebender, but it's two strikers going in there, both with knockout power. That anything can happen there. Jan Blachowicz, I don't think it's going to happen for him if John Jones is there, right? Cyril Gane, probably still miles away, in all fairness. But I'd say two are possibilities there. I'd say Joanna and Three. Ioana, Jan, and Zabit, I think, have strong possibilities next year.
I don't disagree. Could be a big 2020 could be a big year for the European scene. And Pete Carroll, for those of you just listening, has the biggest smile on his face right now.
I love that when I said that at the start, everyone was like, no fucking way. And then I went through the divisions and they're like, shit.
I doubt anyone is like, shit. They're probably like, wow, Pete Carroll's right. But for my promo, I don't even have, I got to think of one like right this second.
I have one for you.
Go ahead.
You have a badge on that said reading is sexy.
It is.
What do you feel is the best book for MMA fans to buy for the Christmas season?
Wow.
I like the Sam Sheridan books back in the day. Did you read them? A Fighter's Mind, A Fighter's Heart?
No.
They were good. Because that would have been before the start of MMA kind of spread.
If I'm telling the truth, most of the books I read in my life are these graphic novels behind me.
Well, I'll tell you is one that I don't know if you're aware about that a lot of people are raving about in Ireland. Mr. Paddy Hill.
Oh, yeah. Book. It's a good one. I do want to read that, actually.
I'll bring it over to you. I'll just give it to you.
Yeah. I'll trade you crystals for the hooligan book.
Absolutely. That sounds good. But really good, though. I know Paddy like 10 years, I'd say, and I was blown away by it because he had a crazy, crazy fucking childhood. We're both from working class areas. I assumed we'd have similar upbringings. No, not at all. No, his is like a fucking movie. Mine was pretty basic in all fairness.
I'll say read the Book of Five Rings because that book is awesome. And I think it's really good for not just fighters, but in general. But for my promo is, it's not a promo. Y'all can tweet me your answer to this. What is the most underrated knockout and submission of the year? I know a lot of people will say like greatest knockout, Holly Holm, Jose Aldo, Anderson Silva, front kick, Jorge Masvidal, Korean Zombie, or Yair Rodriguez. I want to know the most underrated submission. What fight? What knockout submission do you think doesn't get enough love? And you can tweet them at me at Jose Youngs. My name is right here. Also, go watch Coffee Talk. I had a lot of fun doing that with Casey Nestor. I know you
it's
guys
great.
Are the first
it's
ones
great
to do
feature.
It. I love doing that. We had a fun little intro. Apparently, we're a bunch of hipsters that just sit around drinking coffee, talking fighting, and people don't like that. I'm sorry. But I'll ask you a question. I'll ask our viewers a question. Because I'm curious about this. You, as a longtime baseball fan, you don't even have to get into it.
For fuck's sake.
You don't have to get into it. The equivalent of a perfect game is...
Red Sox.
Yes, that is the correct answer to every question I can present you. The greatest baseball team of all time, the Boston Red Sox. Don't even look it up. The equivalent of a perfect game in baseball is a pitcher gets every single out and no one gets on base. It is a perfect performance by a pitcher. In my... Thinking back over the last like 10, 15 years, I can think of two perfect games in MMA. Connor over Eddie and Anderson Silva over Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah.
The actor?
Not Forrest, Forrest Griffin. Forrest Griffin. I just watched the Crying Game the other day too. That's hilarious. So, Anderson Silva versus Forrest Griffin and Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez are the two perfect games that I can remember. Which one is more impressive?
McGregor v. Alvarez because he's going up. Oh, fuck no. Anderson was going up away Division 2. But Forrest wasn't the champion.
He was coming off a loss. He was coming off that loss
Eddie
to Rampage.
Alvarez was the champion.
I think
that belongs to Ireland, my friend.
I don't disagree with you, but I think it's a lot harder than people think because that's the one where Anderson was like the Matrix Anderson, and then he had like the step back like jab that broke Forrest's jaw after dodging all the punches, and he was like, "Come fight!" And then Forrest was like, "What do I do?" And then he threw like five punches, and Anderson like Neo Matrixed him, and then broke his jaw, and then Forrest Griffin ran away.
I tell you, like this year, I mean, two fights I got to see in the flesh were very close to that. Stylebender v. Whitaker was immense. And also Khabib v. Dustin Poirier. I know it's a different kind of fight because there's a lot of grappling, but the work rate there that Khabib was doing, like I mean, he didn't give him a second to rest in any position. Like, if you watch him against the fence, he's trying to strangle him, he's trying to pull him. Like, I mean, he completely overwhelmed him. I was blown away by those performances this year. Are they McGregor, Alvarez? Maybe not, but they were really close.
Well, there are other performances I could think of, like Holly over Ronda was about as perfect as you can get. But Ronda did clinch up, and this and that. Joanna tearing through Carla Esparza. I don't know if you remember that fight. Or
Jessica Penne?
Or Dos Anjos beating Anthony Pettis 50-45 across the board. You might have to give some credence to that, considering he did that for five rounds continuously. But I think Conor Eddie and Anderson Forrest are the greatest two performances I've ever seen by an individual. Tell me which one is better. You could tweet at me. The answer to that, most underrated knockout, most underrated submission of the decade. I know the Anderson one might have been before the decade, but I'm counting it. But we've run up on time. PT, anything else you want to say? You want to plug your phenomenal interview with Jack Hermansson?
Yeah, well, if you're not listening to Eurobash, you're probably a fucking loser anyway. It's out every Tuesday. I mean, do yourself a favor. I'm not going to beg you for it, you know?
No A-side next week. It is Christmas from what I think it's – Christmas is next Wednesday, huh?
Yes, we're doing Eurobash this week from a pub in Dublin, and there's going to be no guests. It's just going to be absolute drivel, so you should listen to that one.
I will 100% listen. I listen to all of them, but PT and I will do the A-side live together in January. Maybe we have something exciting planned that y'all can watch with us. Who knows? For those of you not watching, PT Carroll literally had to cover his mouth because he doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, in case... you know, things happen. You have to. I nearly went and said it, and I was like,
"We got. No. Maybe we'll do something fun." You all, if you guys would want that, you tell us. You can just tweet at Pizza. He loves when his mentions are blown up.
I don't, but I'm gonna shave me lying. Back from it. That's it. I'm gonna shave me back for this. That's how much it means to me. If this comes off, I'll be like a seal.
Of all the things you could have said, that's the last thing I was expecting to come out of your mouth.
You ever seen a hairy back on a seal? I don't think you have, my friend.
I honest to God have never thought about it. Where are your scissors, by the way? Yeah. There you go. Mr. Scissors is back. I got my crystal. Shout out to Jessica one last time.
What do you think of this one, no? What should we prepare? The Jacare or the Ronaldo Souza or this one?
That looks so stupid.
That's what I was going for, baby.
That looks so stupid. It's unbelievable.
Well, is this what it is then? Mr. Scissors.
So if you see PT Carroll, please do that to him. That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
We're doing this, walking through the event.
For those of you now watching, just go find the YouTube channel and we'll do it. For Jose, that's PT. We'll see you in a couple weeks after Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone. Bye.